Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, author of Getting Better When You Can't. This is a podcast that's designed to help you see beyond everything. I believe you'll find the content interesting, engaging, and even life-changing. Please check out my website at www.kevinwinder.com and be sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter entitled Winder's Windshield. Thanks so much for tuning in, and now on to the KevCast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, and we are in the midst of a series, and I told you last week that this week would be the conclusion. But as I was working through the content, I realized, man, I have to take one more stop. I have to weave one more thread in all of this, because I know that some of you are getting kind of snagged. You're getting hung up. You're kind of questioning, where am I going with all this? And what am I talking about? I'm talking about the series, Is God Mad at You? And we're in part four today. So if you haven't listened, please go back and listen to parts one through three so that you know all the different details of what I'm talking about. And if you recall last week, I left you with the parable that Jesus taught, where he talked about the justice of heaven and how those who bore the heat of the day did not like the justice of heaven, which was not based upon merit, but was based upon the generosity or the grace of the Father who made all comers complete. And of course, the implication there is heaven. Is God going to make all people complete as his form of justice? Is it possible that maybe we've missed something growing up and learning that justice is only retribution, meaning that he's going to even the score, and for those who did bad things, he's going to be eternally bad. For those who did good things, he's going to be eternally good. Is that the only justice we've come to know? And so we've talked a lot about this idea, is God mad at us, and why so many people in their faith systems require God to be mad. They need an angry God, but they don't want God to be mad at them. In fact, they have all these very elaborate religious systems of appeasement, which actually allow God to not be mad at them, but allows God to be mad at others. And it's a great question. It's a worthy topic. And so today, in order to really get at it, I have to take a detour. So next week will be the conclusion. And this week, we're going to focus a little bit about ourself. Because if you don't have an understanding of the self, you won't have an understanding of the spiritual journey. And as a result, there's something that takes place that if you miss this category, if you miss this piece, the whole thing is a big question mark in your mind. I don't want that for you. So let's think about this. Is God mad at you? Part four. You know that jokes are only funny if we possess the required categories for understanding. I mean, without those categories, we're kind of like the children who can't grasp the adult humor that we find in movies. If you go to a movie like Toy Story or Finding Nemo or something like that, it's a kid's movie. There are jokes in there that are for the kids, but there's also jokes that are for the moms and dads. And the kids never laugh at those, but the moms and dads do. And that's because the more mature audiences possess the necessary categories to make the joke intelligible. And in the same way, if we lack certain categories in our discussions about God, if our theology has a few holes in it, so to speak, we will not be able to reconcile our present knowledge with the content that I'm trying to bring you, with this wider understanding that I'm presenting in this series. We're just going to come to a place where we simply say, Kev, your cheese has slid off the cracker. Now I know for a fact that you've lost it. When in fact, I didn't get here by turning loose of my Bible, as some people may actually accuse me. I got here by tenaciously reading my Bible. And that is an important distinction. And I want you to come with me. I want you to see this understanding, because it really widens the picture for not just yourself, but for the whole world. And I say this because without this particular puzzle piece that I am going to present to you, the Bible will always be subdivided into binary compartments. They're going to be, you know, delivered into a win-lose paradigm, because that's what we all grew up with. That's how we understand justice. That's how we've come to understand God, is in this on-off, either-or, good-bad, light-dark paradigm system. Okay? We have to get beyond that. And because of that, I want to share this aspect with you. And the piece that I'm referring to is that of the false self. And while the false self could be called a number of things, maybe the small self, the undeveloped self, the childish self, I'm going to use the term false self in this presentation simply because it makes the most sense, and you'll see why. The journey to God, and if you're listening to this podcast and you listen to anything I say, there's an aspect of you that has a spiritual hunger, and you're a seeker, you're a searcher, you're trying to learn something about God. And that journey to God, to learn about who he, she is impossible without a journey through ourself, right? John Calvin said it in his Institutes on the Christian Religion. He said, without the knowledge of the self, there is no knowledge of God. And so all spiritual considerations are essentially assumptions about who we are. They're assumptions about what we are. And so when we understand who we are and what we are, those assumptions actually kind of teleport into our assumptions and understanding about God. These assumptions, by the way, are the bedrock of every culture, every single tribe, every single institution, and every religion or system of faith. They all hold to common assumptions, the things that make them that tribe, that community, that group, that institution, is that they all align around their assumptions about who they are and what they are, and thus who God is and what God isn't. You see, that's how we categorize ourselves. Now, we all go through life trying to convince others of what we think we are. And I know we're going to get into some esoteric space here, but I want you to kind of put on your thinking caps and kind of go through this with me. But think about it. As we grow up, we're trying to convince others of what we think we are. And we adopt behaviors and longings and ambitions and goals that are in keeping with that assumption. We live under a mask, so to speak. The word upokritos is where we get our word hypocrite, and it means under a mask. Because our institutions, these groups, these tribes that we come from, tell us that certain parts of our life, our being, our self, are acceptable, and other parts are not acceptable, right? Every system creates a value system of good, bad, hot, cold, on, off. This is a way you should be instead of how you are. These are ethics, right? And the true self is, it's really, really something different. But the false self is this presentation that we give other people, right? This good-bad divide gives birth to a false self. Why? Well, because spiritual infancy is that period in our lives when we try and convince God and we try and convince others that we don't have the dark side that our community has warned us about. Or are we trying to convince our community and our tribe and our people that we've overcome that dark side and now are something other than what we were. Now, this is not a statement against, transformation. This is actually something else, okay? So don't get the two ideas confused. This is really saying about acceptance in the tribe, in the group. The group says blue is bad. And so you live your life trying to show others that you don't care for blue. Okay? That's what I'm talking about. The true self, though, is always honest. It's always honest about our imperfections. It embraces them. And, you know, it's really necessary for our maturation process. It doesn't look at the bad things we do and say, well, I'm so glad those are all in the rearview mirror now. It actually says, man, I know that I'm working hard on overcoming certain things and I've come a long way, but there's an aspect where that just simply won't go away. And it's part of who I am. And it's kind of like Paul's thorn in his side, right? So this is the reality. The false self wants to put the face in front of everybody and say, I really am this way. The true self owns it. It's honest about the imperfections. It's honest and embraces them, not denies them. And it sees them as necessary for our growing up. And since we can never live better than we think, or we can never live at a stage of consciousness higher than what we actually possess, then it's false self. It's the false self that unnecessarily appraises our life and presents itself far better than we actually are. And I think that's a lot of words to simply say, people are not always what we think they are. And we know that to be true, right? Now, something happens to the false self, even though they're striving to be a good person or striving towards something. Something happens and it's beautiful. And that beautiful thing is called suffering. Pain actually enables us to get really honest. You see, we see our own self and we see our motivations are not that pure. But that takes a ton of honest self-criticism, doesn't it? You know, when you get to the place where you're saying, I need to work on that part of myself, when you are being self-critical and making changes to overcome and to, you are engaging in the heart of spirituality. That is the spiritual process. It's this self-criticism to say this part is a valuable, huge contribution to my life and those around me. And this other part is actually a cost center to my life and those around me. And so I want to make changes that are in keeping with growing this good part and shrinking the small part. That's the spiritual journey. That's what every world religion is all about. And we gain this self-criticism for the first time through our suffering, through humility, right? Through being broken down, through beaten down, by realizing that we're not as good as we thought we were. Our motivations are not as pure as we thought they were. And this is what the Bible calls metanoia. This is what the Bible calls changing the mind or repentance in 2 Corinthians 7:10. Humility enables us to see everything different. Our pain, our confusion, our loss, and even our gravest sin is requiring spirituality to exist within the context of our broken humanity, not despite it. You see, a lot of churches and religions, they get kind of weird and they actually become very Platonic in that dualistic way of thinking where they say the spirit is good, but the body is terrible. And so the spiritual journey is really to get out of the flesh and into some transcendental space. Honestly, that's a religious false self that emerges. The true self is really one that says, look, I come, warts and all, scabs and all, failings and all, into my spirituality. You see, our pain, our confusion, our loss, and even our gravest sin is requiring spirituality to exist within the context of our broken humanity. It's not despite our humanity. So the true self says, when you fall on your face, you own it. And that's just who you are. And it's okay, because you need that fall to help you get up and keep going. The false self says, I don't fall on my face. I'll never fall on my face. And I hate it. And I resist the falling. And I refuse to see any aspect of myself that is falling, right? The false mask of perfection gets tossed out in the spiritual journey as we follow this Christiform pattern through a dark dying process and into a new risen life. That's what spirituality is all about. Okay, so far so good. Now, why am I talking all about this false self? Why am I talking about the difference between the true self and the false self? This is why. Thomas Merton says that the false self is the only self that God knows nothing about. Now, hold on to this, because it is a vital key in this series. This is a new lens through which you can finally see the Bible teaching about hell and separation from God. If you see the paradigm, win-lose paradigm, and you talk about heaven and hell in that paradigm, everything gets chunked up into two pieces. If you understand that the false self is something that God knows nothing about, and then you can start to see why hell and the descriptions in Scripture are designed to talk about the place where only the false self can possibly exist. Okay? So God is perfect truth, right? And as such, he can have no fellowship with falsehood. Perfect knowledge cannot know something false. Perfect love cannot love something that doesn't ultimately exist or that is not permanent and is not true. So in the spiritual growth process, all false things are tossed out as we grow into conformity to the truth. So that's just real life, right? As you gain something true, you replace what you thought was true. As you gain a wider perspective of truth, you replace those narrower perspectives of truth. That's called raising your consciousness. That which is false is refuge. It's trash. It is burned off as slag in the crucible of life and light. Isaiah 48:10 talks about this. I tried you in the fire. It's trash. And as such, it's to be burned and consumed in the dump, or Gehenna, as the Bible's word for hell. So now we have a context to see the stern words of the Lord telling religious people to depart from me, for I never knew you. Right? These are people who are coming up and presenting their false self to God. And he says, depart from me, I never knew you. You're a worker of iniquity. Okay, now we have a context, right? The false self, the one that won't own it, is the one that God can't know. And the thing that God can't know, God has a place for. Thus, the false self has no future. But it does have an extremely noisy and confusing present, because it's always rearing its head in our life. We call it ego. We call it pride. It's the one thing that God says he truly opposes, the proud, right? But he gives tremendous grace to humility. So true spirituality gives us the eyes to see our overgrown egos, our tenacious self-focus, our over-self-reliance, our false distinctions that fed them all, right? This two-story system, this binary system that fed all of our self-propagating and promoting is falling apart in the light of suffering and humility. You see, our true self, by the contrast, is humbly discovered through our pain and is permanently found in the perfect wisdom and love of God. It's always been there. Like, if God always existed, then God's knowledge was always complete and full. And God's knowledge of you existed back then. Otherwise, if he gained a knowledge of you upon your birth, then that would be considered new knowledge. And there was a time where God was not all-knowing. So God must have known all about you. And you were a part of God in that part of God's perfect knowledge and wisdom that has existed forever and ever. And if that part of you has existed prior to your creation, it will certainly exist with God far after your death. It's the only part of you that is true. It's the only part of you that has always been true, that has lasted, and it's found in God. So those that begin to see the true self that is, that all humanity possesses, it's the image of God that we all possess. It's that part of God that comes forth and bears the image. Those that begin to see that true self that is deeply loved, deeply embedded and perfectly found in God, will begin to see themselves as this loving God sees them. It is the false self, and only the false self, that believes that they are what is wrong with them. It is the false self that creates systems of self-righteousness to escape from themselves. So can you kind of see all of this coming together? Can you see how there is a true self that is part of God's design? It's always been there and always will be. It's unchangeable, unmovable, unbreakable. It's impossible to remove. And there's so many texts in Scripture that talk about that. Then there's this part of us that is so false. It's so deceitful. It's so wrong. And that's the part that is to be burnt, to be thrown out, to be sent into Gehenna. It's unlasting. It can't know truth. And so often we make this assumption that that part is who we are. You see, it's the false self, the religious false self that says that's who you are. But it's the true self. It's the true self that knows that's not who I am. There's a divine DNA that runs through me. And I start with a great place and not a bad place. And if you get that distinction, you have moved out of this two-story binary system and you've moved into a new kind of spiritual awareness, a higher way of thinking, a higher consciousness, a Christ consciousness. You know, Jesus and Paul would call it putting on the mind of Christ. And with that, you are now prepared for the other half of Jesus' story, where he talks about the distinctions that we should make and preserve. So the first tale that we talked about was Jesus saying, don't create distinctions. And in this one, he's going to say, don't ignore some distinctions. And it is a tale of an angry God. I hope you'll come back and listen.
Thanks so much for joining the KevCast, where we learn to see beyond everything. I hope this content has helped you, and I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or comments or feedback. Until next time, I hope you have an awesome day, and I can't wait to have you come back real soon.